the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. You know, if you look at it right now, investor sentiment is close to record levels. Major averages are setting new records. Investors seem to be in a happy mood since the elections. I mean, look, the stock market is up double digits since November 8th. And the real question is, will this bull market continue? After all, the Fed is raising rates. So the question is, how long will the good times last before another recession kicks in and with it, a bear market? And when it does, what does that mean for you? How could another bear market recession impact your retirement plans?
You know, John, you're raising a very important point, and especially for, let's say, another recession, a bear market. And we do know right now the Fed is raising interest rates, but there's a general feeling in the country when Donald Trump got elected, he was going to bring forth all this stimulus. It's amazing. 80% of Americans want to see some form of tax reform or tax reduction. It's no surprise that taxes, as you will listen with my guest tomorrow, Stephen Siegel, as we talk about the tax rates, can be as high as 60%, depending on your income bracket and the state that you live in. So there's a lot of euphoria about good things will happen to the economy. The president is focusing on bringing back jobs. Companies have announced they're building new factories here or keeping their factories here. There's talk about tax cuts. There's talk about fiscal stimulus. There's talk about deregulation. And so there's this feeling as the market has responded. But if you listen to the weekend program, we often talk about that the market is getting way ahead of some of these fundamentals. And I think one of the biggest mistakes that any retiree or potential retired person can face is something that we refer to in the industry as sequence risk for retirement. And that's basically starting out your retirement. You've saved all your life. Now you're retired. You've got your portfolio set, and all of a sudden the country goes through a recession and bear market. And we know what happens in these bear markets. For example, you go back to 2000, 2002, the S&P hit 1553 in March of that year. By the time it hit a low in the summer of 2002 at 768, the S&P 500 lost 51%. If you were in the NASDAQ, it was actually much worse. You lost over 70%. Fast forward five more years, the market hit a peak of 1576 on the S&P in October of 2007. By the time we hit a bottom, which was March of 2009, the stock market was down 58%. So it's very hard to recover. Let's take some simple examples. Let's suppose that your goal was to save $1 million for retirement. You now retire, you have $1 million, and the stock market is down 50%. Do you want to experience that at the beginning of your retirement? It could be one of the worst things that happened to you because it's very hard to recover. Remember, if you lose 50%, you need to earn 100% in your portfolio just to break even. So it makes it even worse when you're retired, because if you're working, you can rely on your salary. You don't have to touch your investments, so maybe you can ride out a storm, especially if you're a younger worker just starting out in life. You know, if we go through a bear market today, what difference is that really going to make to you if you're not going to retire for 20 or 30 years? In fact, during a bear market, if you're putting money in your 401k plan, you're picking up shares in those mutual funds at cheaper prices. So when the market turns around, you bought shares at a cheap price, you'll make more money. But for somebody retired, it could be quite critical, because what you're doing is you're drawing down those assets. You're spending, you're living off your income. So you want to protect yourself by reducing risk. There's three things that we know right now. Number one, when you take a look at the stock market, it's the second most highly valued stock market in stock market history. Number two, we know the Fed is raising interest rates coming off the summer of 2016 when interest rates hit the lowest point that we've seen in 5,000 years of recorded history. So bonds are at risk. And it's not just us that are telling you. If you've been listening to FSN, we've been having a series of experts who are pretty much saying the same thing. John, let's go to those clips to Barron's Roundtable Felix Zuloff and Stifel Nicholas's head strategist Barry Bannister.
I think the most important change in the fundamental picture is the rise of inflation. Inflation is coming back, and I'm talking much more about core inflation, not headline inflation. Core inflation is pretty sticky, and I do believe that core inflation will continue to creep upward during the year and next year. And this has not only to do with the U.S. I think this is a global phenomenon. Inflation in many countries is already above declared target levels by the central banks. So I think what we see is the beginning process of monetary policy changes towards less easy money and even towards some tightening.
Felix Zuloff was a Barron's Roundtable member and hedge fund manager. Let's listen to here Barry Bannister.
Those three methods, the CAPE ratio, Tobin's Q, and the household ownership of stocks as a percent of their financial assets, those three methods don't tell you anything about the short term. What they tell you a lot about is your long-term return potential. When stocks are overvalued on 10-year average earnings, CAPE, when they're overvalued on replacement book value, Tobin's Q, and when households have way overweighted stocks in their financial asset portfolios, that pretty much guarantees you're going to have really poor returns the next decade because they're overbought, overowned, overloved. And they're saying somewhere between a 3 and a 5. That's your total return annualized from 2017 to 2027 on New Year's Day.
So there you have two gentlemen warning that inflation is increasing, interest rates are headed higher. As Barry Bannister said, the second most expensive stock market in history implies that the rate of return going forward is going to be substantially less. And if you look at it, a lot of investors are invested in bonds. It's been a good place to be for the last 8 years, but now the interest rate and inflation cycle, it's changing, and bond investors are now facing risk, and I don't think a lot of them have come to grips with that yet. Realize it.
No, and that was a topic that we discussed last week on Lifetime Income, was the risk that are embedded, so to speak, in many bond funds. You have liquidity risk, meaning that the bonds that the fund owns are illiquid. They couldn't liquidate them within 7 days. We talked about several popular funds. 40% of their portfolio is illiquid. So imagine if investors start to pull out, what that means is it forces the bond fund manager to sell those bonds at a much lower price because they just have to liquidate. It's like a fire sale. The other thing that is also embedded in many of these bond funds, and especially the mistake that investors make shopping for the highest yield, is something called duration risk. And that is the risk that the bond fund is subject to in a rise of interest rates. Now, I'll just give you some popular examples. Two of the most popular widely held ETFs, one is called LQD, and that is basically a bond fund that invests in high-grade corporate bonds. It reached a peak last summer, and that was the bottom of the interest rate market. It was selling at $122 a share. Today, it's around roughly about $115. It's down 6%. So you gave back all of the gains of the first half of 2016. And right now, if you've been spending the interest income living off it, your principal's down 6%. TLT is another popular ETF. It holds mainly 20-year treasury bonds. It hit a high of 141 last summer when interest rates bottomed, and it's now trading around 116. It's down 18%. So if you're living off that income, you've lost almost 20% of your principal. And as we've been talking and really covering this topic extensively on the weekend show, we believe we've started a new secular bear market in bonds, meaning that if you just retired, you are most likely to spend your entire retirement years in a rising interest rate environment. Now, that could be good news or bad news, depending on how you've position yourself. But interest rates bottomed last summer, and it's just personal opinion, I think you are unlikely ever to see those rates again in your lifetime.
Last week, we did discuss the risk of bond funds that people are invested in that, as I just mentioned, they're probably not aware of. So if you find yourself in this rising rate environment, how are you going to minimize that risk, especially when you realize that some of the ETFs are down anywhere between, what, 6 or 20%, depending on which one you look at?
Well, let me tell you what we're doing for our clients. I mean, last year, at the beginning of the year, we were taking advantage of individual bonds. When we had that hiccup in the financial markets, the spread between, let's say, sovereign bonds like treasuries and corporate bonds widened. So we were able to take advantage of that, go in and buy bonds. I can think of one bond that paid a 5% coupon that we bought for 95 cents. So we actually made 10% on that bond in a 1 year period. But right now we're in a different kind of environment. We are now, unlike, let's say, the previous 2 years where the Fed only raised once, they raised once December 2015, they raised once in 2016. This year, it looks like there's going to be three, maybe four rate hikes. So now what we're doing is we're buying floating rate bonds. These are bonds that adjust the interest rate every 6 months. If interest rates went up, that means when they adjust, make the next adjustment, they're going to raise the rates. And the nice thing about that is we can get bonds at a discount and get between 4 and 5%. We're also doing short-term laddered bonds. And the reason we're doing that is if we know the Fed's going to be raising rates this year, they're going to raise rates next year, and they'll keep raising them until they break something. We think somewhere either towards the end of 2018 or 2019, we're going to be in a recession in a bear market. We think the stock market probably peaks this year. So the nice thing about a laddered bond portfolio, if I have a bond that, let's say, comes due in a year from now, and the Fed has raised interest rates three more times, that means when that bond comes due, I can invest the proceeds at a higher interest rate. The other thing is we're also using what we call specialty bond managers. These are bond fund managers that are very active. It's not set and forget. One of the funds that we're using is actually shorting European debt, because the Europeans are probably where the Fed was 2 years ago. I expect to see sometime this year that the European Central Bank will announce taper, meaning that they'll begin to reduce the amount of money that they're printing and buying bonds. And eventually you're going to see interest rates rise as they've risen since the election in Europe. And so an active bond fund manager that shorts that market makes money as interest rates go up because the bonds drop in value. He's made money on those bonds. So we're using, John, a combination of three things in the bond market: floating rate bonds, short-term laddered bonds, and specialty bond fund managers. The other thing that we're also doing is we're using high dividend paying stocks, where we can get 2, 3, or 4% or more in dividends, because we think these stocks will hold up much better if we get into a market downturn.
So given the fact that you do expect a recession followed by a bear market, I know we've been talking about it for quite some time on Financial Sense News Hour, what do you do then? Is the key to this whole thing trying to time the market to get out at the right time? Or how do you do this, or just make early moves?
I wouldn't say market timing, but what you do is you change your asset allocation, because we're in the process of de-risking portfolios. We're no longer 100% invested in stocks. Depending on a client's objective, we have bond and cash in portfolios anywhere from 20 to 40%. So, you know, every client has a different risk profile. We have different portfolios designed for that. And also depending on age, obviously somebody that's in their late 60s or 70s is probably going to have a different portfolio than somebody that's in their 50s. And we also change as the business cycle changes. Right now, the PMIs or the LEIs are heading up both here and abroad. So that tells us, you know, I'm not worried about a recession this year, and I'm not worried about, you know, a couple more rate hikes. Although, if you notice, the market hasn't been doing much since the rate hike that we got in March, and we know that another one is probably coming, probably most likely in June, and maybe another one towards the end of the year. So the market has been holding back. About the only thing that will be the next catalyst for stocks to go higher will be higher earnings or a tax cut if enacted by Washington, because a tax cut would increase corporate profits. Obviously, if you make a dollar of profits and you have to pay 35% in tax, which is the tax rate here in the U.S., the highest in the world, if they lower that tax rate to probably most likely 20%, well, that means instead of paying, let's say you make $1 million, right now the tax rate's 35%. So you would pay the government $350,000. Now, if they reduce the tax rates to 20%, you'd only pay, let's say, the government $200,000. So you would save $150,000 in taxes, which would increase corporate earnings. We also know that the earnings sector, at least for the S&P this year, is most likely to be higher than last year based on two sectors. One, the beaten down energy sector, and two, the beaten down financial sector. As interest rates rise, banks make more profit. They pay you less money as a depositor, and they charge you more when you're borrowing. I don't care if it's, you know, a home equity loan, you're going out buying a car, leasing a car, or buying a new house. You're going to pay more in interest rates, and that profit margin goes to banks. So the next catalyst, John, is probably going to come from either tax cuts or some form of increased earnings that we could see in the S&P, and mainly coming from two main sectors, energy and financials. If we do not get a tax cut, just as they thought they were going to repeal Obamacare, that would be bad news for the market, and we could see a more severe correction than this recent pullback that we've seen. But we don't time the market, because you never know the exact moment that the stock market is going to top. I mean, there are a number of things that could mitigate and push off a recession. One of them would be tax cuts, and that would probably be the most immediate one. Secondly, would be deregulation. And as far as infrastructure spending, by the time the government passes a law, by the time the money gets allocated and spent at the state level, you're looking 2 to 3 years out. That might be something that helps the economy in 2019 or 2020, an election year. But right now, we are changing because the business cycle is changing. And we know we're getting closer to the end of this bull market, and we're getting closer to the next recession, because we do know every time the Fed raises interest rates, they will continue to raise those interest rates until they throw the economy into a recession, and that will be followed by a bull market. So it begins with us, with risk assessment and really knowing where you are in the business cycle, and then also adjusting those portfolios as the cycle changes.
So what you're talking about here then is you have a couple of options. One is to change the asset mix as the cycle changes, which makes sense, or as the risk factors involving a particular client changes, especially if the psychology of the client moves, like if the client gets more and more nervous and becomes more risk adverse, then you want to switch things around.
And we also try to guide them, too, because, I mean, if you've been listening to the weekend show, it's no secret we were big fans of dividend-paying blue-chip stocks going back to late 2011. And so I can think of one client who lost nearly half his assets in the downturn of 2007 and 2009. And when he came on and became a client, he had lost half of his portfolio. And here we are talking about putting them in stocks. And we said, no, this is a good time to be in stocks. Stock prices are cheaper. Dividend yields are higher than what you can get in the bond market. And so sometimes we try to guide clients along those lines and saying, look, the crash already occurred. That took place between 2007 and 2009. The Fed is goosing the economy. That was back in the days when they were doing QE1, 2, and 3. And all of that liquidity was going to be good for the market. In addition to the fact you had corporations that were buying back $500 billion of stock a year. So sometimes you need to guide the client and provide some guidance and say, look, the business cycle is getting better. The Fed's lowered interest rates. They're printing money. This is a good time to be in stocks. But right now, John, we're no longer 100% in stocks. We've been gradually taking profits. We just took profits on another asset this week, and we're redeploying those assets defensively. And as I mentioned earlier, we're changing the bond portfolios and we're adapting to a Fed rate raising cycle, because the Fed is getting more aggressive. They're going from this once a year to probably 3 or 4 times a year. And by doing that, we're reducing volatility, but we're de-risking the portfolio. It reminds me of the old Will Rogers saying. He said, you could be on the right track, but if you sit there long enough, you eventually get run over. And that's what bear markets do.
So the real issue still cycles back to the idea that investors are euphoric. They're anticipating good times. We've had those since 2009, but now the times are changing. And even, Jim, you talk about the third stage of a bull market being usually when this sort of mass euphoria sets in, when everybody realizes that something's been going on and they jump in just about the time the market's going to shift.
Exactly. And that's why we've seen this rise in the stock market. A lot of it was based on this enthusiasm for what the president was going to do. But as we just saw last Friday, is that they couldn't even get health care through. And even now, as they're going to move towards tax reform, there's a big division within the Republican Party for what that tax reform should look like. And forget the Democrats. The Democrats are opposed to tax cuts. So, you know, all this idea that tax cuts, repeal of Obamacare, deregulation, that's one thing that the president is doing through executive orders and through his cabinet post. But in terms of repeal of Obamacare, tax cuts, and infrastructure spending, John, we're lucky. The latest talk is they may have to just settle for maybe a corporate tax rate cut because there seems to be agreement within Congress and both parties to do that. So the market, in our opinion, has gotten ahead of itself in terms of the fundamentals. So now is the time you need to be thinking about de-risking a portfolio. And the real issue here is we've seen so often over the years in case studies we've shared here on the program is too many times investors are looking for a pill or a silver bullet. Just give me one asset class, one idea that I can stick to, and they go all in. I don't care if it's all in bond funds, stocks, or gold. The problem is we have a rising dollar because there's an interest rate differential between what you can earn here in the United States and what you can earn overseas. And that is going to place a bid underneath the dollar, and it's also going to place a cap in terms of how high long-term interest rates can go. Remember, the markets determine long-term rates. The Fed determines short-term rates. So whenever you see a Fed policy in the business cycle changing, you need to reallocate the portfolio. As I mentioned, what we're doing right now for our clients is on the bond side, we are going to laddered bonds. Primarily this year, we're using floating rate bonds because now the Fed's going to be raising interest rates probably three times, and there's even talk maybe four, but we'll stick with three. Well, what that means, if I have a floating rate bond, that means the interest rate on that bond is going to be going up every time the Fed raises interest rates. So the rate of return on that bond is also going up. And we're also using active fund managers. We use one fund that is shorting the European debt market and is doing quite well with that because I think the next area to see rising interest rates, it's already occurred if you look at where rates are in Europe today compared to where they were last summer. And then finally, we're going to more dividend, more staple type stocks, things like staples, healthcare, utilities that pay high dividends, which are much safer.
Well, given your experience, Jim, what would you say, especially in the light of what we're discussing here, what would you say the biggest mistakes are investors make as they're headed into retirement?
I would say probably, well, the biggest mistake overall is not having a retirement plan because it's like heading out on a trip without a roadmap. But I would say the other things that I see made in investing is they tend to put all their assets in one asset class. Number two, not understanding what it is that they own and the risk inherent in the things that they own. And we talked about this last week in bond funds. I can't tell you the number of bond funds that are high risk that invest. The most popular bond funds right now that investors own are probably some of the riskiest ones. And they don't understand duration risk. They don't understand liquidity risk because typically you sell a bond fund on its yield. So if you have two bond funds to pick from, one's paying 2.5%, 2.8%, another one's paying 3.5%, investors will go with the one that's paying 3.5%, thinking that's better. But not understanding the reason it's paying 3.5%, it probably has more illiquid bonds. It's more invested longer term, so it's subject to interest rate risk. And I would say probably the final mistake is they put their portfolio, and I call it a set and forget. They retire. They put their portfolio together. Okay, this is my retirement plan. and they go off taking trips, playing golf, doing whatever they do in their hobbies, not realizing that you have to constantly, as the business cycle changes, as monetary policy changes, you have to reallocate the assets in your portfolio if you want to stay ahead and preserve your capital. I think one of the biggest things I see right now that I'm concerned about is there are a lot of 401k plans that are going to be the major asset for individuals that are retired. And what we see many times is an investor joins a company, signs up for the 401k plan, they pick a couple funds, and then it's kind of like set and forget. And every single month, the money goes into the same different mutual funds, however it was allocated originally, and they don't change that the closer that they get towards retirement, or they make mistakes and go into some of these target funds, you know, like, oh, I'm going to retire in 10 years, so I go into a target fund in the year 2025 or something like that. So a lot of this stuff is put on automatic pilot. And really, if you're 5 years away from retirement, you ought to look at what is called in-service rollovers, where if you're with a big enough company, they allow you to roll over part of your 401k to an IRA where you have more selection and choices. And at least you should be reviewing your 401k plan and see if your original allocation that you started, let's say you start out with the company 10 years, 15 years ago, is the same allocation that would be appropriate risk-wise in terms of a upcoming recession or bear market or an upcoming retirement.
Well, we looked at investors. Now, I have a different question for you. What would you say the biggest mistake that advisors make is?
Well, there's a trend in the industry to commoditize the industry, to simplify it. And one of the things that happens is we get into these paradigms. Given your age, you fill out this profile. Okay, you're age 55, you get this. And you get a pie chart, and you're going to have X amount of dollars in large cap stocks. You're going to have X in small cap, some international stocks, some bond funds, maybe international funds. And you get this pie chart portfolio, which is great. Maybe at that moment in time, it's not great as the economy changes, as you get closer to retirement, or Federal Reserve policy changes. I call them the set and forget type of portfolios. The other thing, too, is a lot of this financial planning software is based on historical returns over a 100-year period. And over that 100-year period, stocks have returned 10%, bonds have returned 6%. Well, folks, I can tell you bonds have not returned 6%. You're not earning 6% on bonds. You're not earning 3.8% on T-bills. And certainly in the last 17 years, you have not made 10% in the market. In fact, from 2000 to 2013, you made zero, not counting dividends that you would have received if you were in the S&P 500. So we think these historical returns, we don't use them in our planning software because we just don't think they're appropriate for the type of market and cycle that we're in now. I mean, you know, think about it, folks. Last summer were the lowest interest rates recorded in human history, where one-third of all sovereign bonds in the world had negative interest rates. That certainly didn't figure in the returns when you look at these historical returns over 100 years. So we don't use those.
So if we see that there is another recession and bear market coming, maybe this year up as late as 2019, then the question is what you should be doing.
If you were 5 or 10 years away from retirement, you really should be working with an advisor. Give us a call. I mean, there are a lot of things you're going to have to talk about. For example, maximizing your Social Security benefits. When do you start them? Do you delay them? The right pension decisions. We had a client that came to us recently, and he had two options to either take the money and roll it over into an IRA, which is typical of what most people do, but he also had an annuity option from the company. And quite honestly, the annuity option based on his life and that of his wife was better than any kind of return we could get personally or what he could get from another insurance company. So there's pension decisions you're going to have to make. There are decisions you're going to have to make about de-risking your portfolio, minimizing your taxes, whether income taxes or estate taxes. So, I mean, if you really want to enjoy a successful retirement and not get into difficulties 5 or 10 years into it, especially, I would just put out this caveat. If you listen to the weekend program, you listen, you know the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. You know what that means eventually. Eventually are going to have another recession and a bear market. So the question you need to ask yourself, what would happen to your portfolio if you went through another bear market like we did in 2007 or like we did in the year 2000? How would that change or reshape your retirement? If you have those kind of questions, give us a call.
Coming up tomorrow on the program is Stephen Siegel. He will be discussing income taxation and tax planning for the 90% of us. So if you think it's only for somebody who is uber rich, you might want to think again. Now time for our weekly case study, which of course is based on real life. We change the names of the people to protect their privacy, and they illustrate the things we're discussing here on the program. And we also post on the website slides that you can see that illustrate the points that Jim is making. Okay, take it away, Jim.
John, you bring up a good point. If you're listening to this program and you want to follow along on the case study, we do provide the slides because there's a lot of information. There's a lot of numbers. So we don't emphasize all these numbers, but you can take a look at the slides and I think you'll find them helpful. This week, we've got Carlos and Laura Martinez. Carlos is age 63. Laura is age 64. Both want to retire now. Carlos' life expectancy, given his health questionnaire, is 86. It's 88 for Laura. Their risk tolerance is moderately conservative, and this is what we find most people find themselves in heading into retirement. One of the big things that we find through the planning process, their risk tolerance in terms of who they are individuals as risk and what they've actually invested are almost two different stories. Sometimes they're much, much different, with the portfolios tending to be higher risk. So their investment objective is income with capital preservation. Just a little backgrounder. Carlos was an engineer. He worked as an engineer, but was recently laid off and given a severance package. At this point, he would prefer not to have to find a new job. He would like either to retire or look at taking on a less stressful job that would not pay as much. In other words, it is one option that people are looking at today more and more for a lot of boomers is, okay, you either get laid off in the case of Carlos, or let's say you retire, but you don't fully retire. You get a new job, and maybe you're semi-retired doing something else. So this is what Carlos wanted to do. He laid off. He didn't want to go back into a full-time stressful job. He is concerned about the timing of the retirement. As many people that get laid off, you think you're going to work at the company to, you know, X age. A lot of people saying, I'm going to work to age 66 and I get my social security benefits that will make up for part of what I used to earn. But sometimes that's not the way things work out. He's also concerned about the economy, especially since his recent layoff. Laura is a paralegal. She worked at the same firm for 20 years. She's really concerned about their ability to retire and cover the rising cost of retirement. She would like to maintain the same standard of living if possible, but likes the idea of moving to Portland to be closer to their grandkids. And of course, everything here in California is cheaper. Some of the things that they were concerned about, can they retire maintaining their standard of living? They'd like to have that time for retirement to spend time with their grandkids, one of the things they miss. They also want to protect their nest egg because they remember what happened to them and their retirement plans back in 2007 and 2009. Their budget, basically $96,000, $70,000 was essential, about $26,000 discretionary. Laura's salary was $48,000, so they were short about $48,000 to meet their budget of $96,000, especially with Carlos's layoff. Taking a look at what their budget would be in retirement, they figured $62,000 for essentials, $22,000 roughly in discretionary income. Given their Social Security benefits of $46,000, they would have a shortfall roughly of $38,000. Looking at their assets, their primary residence, $850,000. Another advantage of moving to Portland is the housing there would be a little bit cheaper here in California, especially Southern California. Carlos' retirement, $941,000. Their joint account, $28,000. Cash and precious metals, $65,000. One of the problems is that precious metals account used to be $200,000. Today it was $65,000. So total investment assets of a little over $1 million. They had liabilities on the home of $520,000. That would be another advantage of moving and getting a smaller home. It would be much cheaper and they wouldn't have to carry bigger mortgage payments. One of the things that we're really concerned about, and it was a big concern of Carlos's. You imagine, folks, if you get laid off when you were expected you wanted to work to age 66. So they were worried about sequence of risk. In other words, what happens now that, you know, Carlos has lost his job? Here's $1 million of lifetime savings. What happens if we go through another bear market like 2007 and you lose half the assets? So they were concerned about the risk returns of the market, retiring and managing that income, and also where we are in the business cycle as the company worked for is laying off people. It wasn't just Carlos. A lot of fellow workers got laid off as well. And also being able, like anybody else, to be able to maintain the same standard of living. Now, we talked about this sequence of risk, and this is something you really need to pay a lot of attention to if you're 3-5 years away from retirement or you just retired, because the risk of having low or negative returns at the beginning of retirement will reshape your retirement entirely. Imagine losing 40 to 50% of your assets in a bear market at the beginning of your retirement. It's going to take you 100% return just to get back to breaking even. And as many of you are relying on your 401k program or the money you saved up in that 401k or pension plan as your main asset next to Social Security, you really can't afford to go through a bear market, especially when you take a big hit like that, as people did between 2000 and 2002, and once again, 5 years later, between 2007 and 2009. What we did is we allocated a mixed portfolio of laddered bonds and dividend-paying stocks, and that would produce a total investment income of about $40,000 a year, grand total of $86,000, less their budget of $84,000, a surplus of $2,600. Now that return eventually will go up over time with dividend increases. But in order to retire, since they do not have any pensions other than the 401k, both will need to continue. As we mentioned, the $2,600 surplus that we created with the portfolio doesn't really give us a big margin of error for serious medical expenses. And as we pointed out in the plan, most people will spend out of pocket at least $250,000 or more out of pocket expenses for medical care throughout retirement. So we recommended that they work part time and also basically relocate from California to Portland and sell their current home and buying a smaller home up in Oregon. This substantially would reduce their expenses and provide additional assets that could be used to create income. In other words, increase their income. And also, as we mentioned, we invested more conservatively. They had no bonds in their portfolio. It was mainly in stocks. And that was one of the things that I talked about, Carlos. I go, look, you just got laid off. Eventually, we're going to go into a recession. What you don't want to do is see this $1 million that you have in assets go down by 40, 50%, because you'll end up working well into your 70s if that happens. The key thing here is by relocating, Carlos and Laura can not only enjoy the lifestyle at a more reasonable cost, downsizing the home would reduce expenses and also create the ability to produce more income, enjoy other aspects of their life. So here, John, was a tax inversion, as we call it. They were selling an expensive home here in Southern California and then moving to Portland, where they would buy a smaller home because they didn't need the big family home that the kids were raised in. You would get rid of a mortgage payment. The property taxes would be cheaper. The state taxes would be cheaper. Everything would be cheaper. But we still mentioned that they were going to have to work part-time doing something because there just wasn't enough surplus coming in to take care of inflation and take care of future medical expenses, which I told them, I said, with life expectancy into the 80s, between the both of you, you're going to spend probably close to $250,000, which is another way of saying your annual budget should be increased by $10,000 a year just to handle future medical expenses. So here, changing the portfolio, de-risking the portfolio, selling an expensive house, downsizing and going to another state where it was cheaper to live, the homes would be cheaper, everything would be cheaper, plus they were closer to their kids and their grandkids.
You know, this is one of the things that we have begun to thrum quite a bit on the weekend program, talking especially about the bond market risk, and that you have to think about whether or not you're prepared for another bear market and the accompanying recession and de-risking. And it is important that you do that, especially when you look at retirement issues. You don't want to start your retirement with a bear market being unprepared, because it's going to alter your retirement for the rest of your life. Jim, if people want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
We have an 800 number. It's 800-486-3939. Just give us a call, and we'd be glad to talk to you or talk to my team of financial planners. And for those of you that are still working, that are 5, maybe 10 years away from retirement, and you have a 401k program at work, you know, a lot of people, John, they don't even look at their portfolios. And especially if you work for a company that is matching your contributions, well, you put in a dollar, the company puts in a dollar, your 401k plan grows. But think of how you're invested. Have you made the appropriate allocation changes, or are you still in the same kind of portfolio that you began when you signed up for the program? Really take some time, know what it is you own, and what are the risks involved in the funds that you're invested in? How will they hold up in another recession and bear market, and especially if you're getting closer to retirement? In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries, or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.